Created by gay American artist Robert Indiana in the 1960s, it has been reproduced in many formats and in a variety of colors.
Although relatively few in number, we're talking about talented and trained Americans who are serving their country with honor and distinction.
I'm doing the military a great favor.
Should I stay or should I go?
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Tbilisi anti-pride mobs target promo homo journos. The queer story behind an iconic 1960s pop graphic and tracing the tricky timeline of the U.S. trans troop rollout. Those stories and more this week because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Lucia Chappelle.
And I'm Michael LeBeau.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBT communities around the world for the week ending July 10th, 2021. Religious conservatives in the Georgian capital of Tbilisi tried to stamp out LGBTQ pride this week, but their efforts backfired. The elders of the highly influential Orthodox Church issued a statement denouncing the planned Pride Parade as a grave sin. They sponsored a protest march to precede the Pride Parade that descended into violence, with the crowd turning on journalists they accused of spreading LGBTQ propaganda. According to various media reports, up to 50 reporters were injured by rocks, bottles, and sticks. Mobs then ransacked the offices of the planned Pride March for Dignity organizers. Activists say police stood by as they were attacked, along with more journalists on the scene. Earlier in the week, the same mix of religious fervor and ultranationalism had sent anti-queer mobs to prevent the Pride Week Queer Film Festival from taking place. Reeling from the backlash, organizers canceled all remaining Tbilisi Pride Week events, including the march. However, the day after the Pride March would have taken place, thousands of people gathered outside the Georgian Parliament building to protest the homophobic violence. A counter-protest reportedly drew less than 200 people. Pride organizers called the demonstration of support historic. The embassies of more than 15 countries joined a chorus of global criticism against the Black Sea Nation. A crowdfunding Just Giving page has been opened to help Tbilisi Pride rebuild back bigger and better.
Global outrage is also swirling around the brutal murder of a young gay man in Spain. Samuel Luis was video chatting with a friend outside a bar in the early hours of July 3rd in the northwest city of A Coruña. A group of young men gathered outside the bar thought Luis was trying to film them. As he was trying to explain what he was doing, one of the men attacked him. Up to a dozen people joined the mob attack, chasing Luis down the street. Friends of the 24-year-old nursing assistant said several of the attackers shouted anti-gay slurs. Luis was eventually rushed to the hospital, where he died. Three men and a woman in their early 20s have been arrested in connection with the vicious beating death, according to the most recent reports. An estimated 30,000 marched for justice for Samuel through the streets of A Coruña. Demonstrations arose in several other Spanish cities, including Barcelona and Valencia. Some protest signs declared, "Your homophobia is killing us." Videos posted to social media from Madrid showed riot police allegedly engaged in crowd control, attacking peaceful protesters and random passersby. Several politicians condemned what were termed disproportionate and incomprehensible attacks. Tens of thousands of people have already signed a petition to rename the street where he was killed in his honor to ensure that the world never forgets Samuel Luis.
The pro-queer social media accounts of students at leading universities in China were unexpectedly shut down this week. They all used the highly popular WeChat app to offer a range of services from mental health support to media reviews and other queer-related content. Operators also discovered that all of their past content had been deleted. One account manager who insisted on anonymity told Reuters that they had been censored without warning. All of us have been wiped out. When the news agency tried to access a sampling of the excised LGBTQ accounts, they were blocked by messages from WeChat saying that the groups had received numerous complaints and had violated regulations on the management of accounts offering public information service on the Chinese internet. Homosexuality was decriminalized in China in 1997 and removed from the medical profession's official list of mental disorders in 2001. However, social taboos remain strong, and there are no legal protections for LGBTQ people. Users of the popular Chinese social media site Weibo sharply criticized the shutdowns. One wrote, "What saddens me the most is that we have no idea how to revolt and who we should react against."
The European Court of Human Rights ruled this week that Russia violated the rights of a transgender woman by preventing her from seeing her children because of her gender identity. The official rationale was that contact with her children would have a negative impact on their mental health and psychological development. But the court decided that denying her contact with her children violated Articles 8 and 14 of the European Convention on Human Rights. Those provisions guarantee the right to respect for private and family life, home and correspondence, and the prohibition of discrimination. Activists say that it's the first time the court has applied Article 14 to a case involving gender identity. The trans plaintiff is identified in court documents as AM. She separated from her wife after 7 years of marriage and secured legal gender recognition in 2015. Russian authorities supported her ex-wife's decision to deny AM access to their two young children. Masson Davis of Transgender Europe applauded the court's ruling. He noted that every fourth trans person in Europe is a parent. This judgment gives legal security to many of them. Russia, under Vladimir Putin, has a long history of thumbing its nose at ECHR rulings, however, so there's no reason to believe that this case will be an exception.
Hungary's widely condemned ban on the discussion of homosexuality and gender fluidity in schools or on television took effect on July 8th. A group of activists erected a 30-foot-high rainbow-colored heart outside the parliament building in Budapest that day, as representatives of Hungary's LGBTQ advocacy group, the Hathair Society, and Amnesty International Hungary held a press conference. They vowed that members are preparing to challenge the law through civil disobedience actions, according to the Washington Blade. Meanwhile, the European Parliament approved a non-binding resolution strongly condemning the ban. It urges the EU to take urgent action against Hungary and calls for teeth in the form of denying EU funds to the country if the law is not repealed. Attempts to cajole and now threaten Prime Minister Viktor Orban's government may not be enough. He's steadfastly withstood Europe's withering criticism thus far. Orban's chief of staff told Reuters that Brussels' efforts to have us allow LGBT plus activists into schools and nursery schools are in vain. We are not willing to do that.
Briefly, in U.S. news, Ohio's Republican Governor Mike DeWine has signed the latest measure advancing the primary agenda of Republican-controlled state legislatures this year, aside from voter suppression, that is. A provision buried in Ohio's two-year budget bill allows doctors and other healthcare professionals to refuse to treat patients if they have a moral objection. The measure specifically gives any medical provider, including insurance companies, the freedom to decline to perform, participate in, or pay for any healthcare service which violates the practitioner's, institution's, or payer's conscience as informed by the moral, ethical, or religious beliefs. That clearly jeopardizes access to services for LGBTQ people and women seeking reproductive care. According to the Columbus Dispatch, at least a dozen other U.S. states have enacted similar conscience clause laws.
Delegates to the General Assembly of the Presbyterian Church in America voted on July 1st to ban gay men from ordination as priests. The vote was 1,438 to 417. The amendment to the Book of Church Order refers to same-gender love as the sinfulness of fallen desires. It also subtly affirms spirit-empowered conversion therapy. The new rule must be approved by two-thirds of the denomination's regional presbyteries and then confirmed at the next General Assembly in 2022. The Presbyterian Church in America is one of three Presbyterian denominations in the United States.
Finally, Brigham Young University in Provo, Utah, is as Mormon a place of higher learning as there is. Church leaders have nothing good to say about LGBTQ people, and the university's honor code specifically bans the recognition of same-gender unions. But an anonymous group of BYU students staged the university's first, albeit unofficial, Pride event on June 28th. More than 1,000 current and former BYU students and staff and their allies marched from Joaquin Park to Kiwanis Park, just blocks from the campus. They waved rainbow flags along the route and held up signs insisting that love is the answer and hate has no home here. The Salt Lake Tribune reported that cooperative police officers guided the marchers, simply asking them to stay on the sidewalk and obey traffic signals. Black gay BYU graduate Stacy Harkey spoke at a rally to kick the march off. He said that the larger than expected turnout surprised organizers. Harkey called it an absolutely exhilarating experience that gave me so much hope for the future of the queer community.
That's News Wrap, Global Queer News with Attitude, for the week ending July 10th, 2021. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon, edited by Lucia Chappelle, produced by Brian DeShazer, and brought to you by you.
Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more.
And you can read the transcript and listen to News Wrap each week by subscribing to our This Way Out radio channel on YouTube. For This Way Out, I'm Michael LeBeau. Stay healthy.
And I'm Lucia Chappelle. Stay safe.
We have this update from Tbilisi, Georgia. One of the many journalists beaten by anti-LGBTQ rioters has succumbed to his injuries. News of the death of TV Pervelli cameraman Alexander Lashkarava has added fuel to spontaneous pro-queer protests following the mob violence and the cancellation of Tbilisi Pride. Demands include the resignation of the government and an independent investigation into the mob violence. The Interior Ministry is blaming the homophobic attacks on Pride organizers themselves for being unreasonable. We'll continue to follow this ongoing story.
I think it's fair to say this has been an educational process for a lot of people here in the department, including me. The reality is that we have transgender service members serving in uniform today.
Follow the twisted timeline to trans inclusion in the U.S. military. But first...
Love is everywhere, I see it. You are all that you can be, go on.
If you see love everywhere, it may be because a gay man gave it a makeover, as we discover in this Rainbow Minute.
Love is everywhere, coming up now on the Rainbow Minute. The word love, with L-O stacked on top of V-E, is a worldwide iconic image in paintings, graphic designs, and sculpture. Created by gay American artist Robert Indiana in the 1960s, it has been reproduced in many formats and in a variety of colors. First appearing in English, it's now seen in Spanish, Chinese, Italian, and Hebrew. The TV series Bridget Loves Bernie included the love sculpture in New York City at 6th Avenue in its opening credits. The novel, Love Story, alluded to the design on its original cover. In 1973, the U.S. Postal Service issued its first Valentine's Day stamp incorporating the love icon, and in 2011, a special Valentine's Day edition of Google's logo was based on the same image. The Rainbow Minute is produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns at WRIR in Richmond, Virginia, and read by volunteers like me, Mark Paul, in North Laurel, Maryland.
Love is everywhere, I see it. You are all that you can be, go on and be it. My perfect, I believe it. Come and play the game with me.
Hey everybody, this is Leah Delaria, and you are listening to This Way Out.
Good news, good news. Are you signed up for our new e-newsletter, Inside This Way Out?
We send them out every few weeks, briefly reviewing recent and previewing upcoming programming and deepening the conversation about your favorite international LGBTQ radio show.
All you have to do is email us at info@thiswayout.org.
And be assured that we don't share or sell your email address or anything about you to anyone else, and we never will.
Again, to receive the occasional Inside This Way Out, and let us know you're listening, email us at info@thiswayout.org.
First you say you do, and then you don't. And then you say you will, and then you won't. You're undecided now. So what are you gonna do?
Transgender people in the U.S. military have been pushed into and out of camouflage since 2016. Earlier this year, the Biden administration reopened the opportunity to serve that his predecessor had slammed shut. The road to trans inclusion had to pass through minefields, not unlike the ones that previous bans on military service had overcome. Harry Horton of Feature Story News reported the first breakthrough in June of 2016.
Five years after the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy on gay and lesbian troops ended, the United States military has lifted another barrier to service.
I'm here today to announce some changes in the Defense Department's policies regarding transgender service members.
U.S. Defense Secretary Ash Carter has long wanted to allow transgender service members, with thousands already thought to be serving in secret.
Before I announce what changes we're making, I want to explain why. There are three main reasons, having to do with our future force, our current force, and matters of principle. The first and fundamental reason is that the Defense Department and the military need to avail ourselves of all talent possible in order to remain what we are now, the finest fighting force the world has ever known. Our mission is to defend this country. And we don't want barriers unrelated to a person's qualification to serve preventing us from recruiting or retaining the soldier, sailor, airman, or marine who can best accomplish the mission. We have to have access to 100% of America's population for our all-volunteer force to be able to recruit from among them the most highly qualified and to retain them. Although relatively few in number, we're talking about talented and trained Americans who are serving their country with honor and distinction. We invest hundreds of thousands of dollars to train and develop each individual, and we want to take the opportunity to retain people whose talent we've invested in and who've proven themselves. And this brings me to the second reason, which is that the reality is that we have transgender service members serving in uniform today. And I have a responsibility to them and to their commanders to provide them both with clearer and more consistent guidance than is provided by current policies. We owe commanders better guidance on how to handle questions such as deployment, medical treatment, and other matters. And this is particularly true for small unit leaders like our senior enlisted and junior officers. Also, right now, most of our transgender service members must go outside the military medical system in order to obtain medical care that is judged by doctors to be necessary, and they have to pay for it out of their own pockets. This is inconsistent with our promise to all our troops that we will take care of them and pay for necessary medical treatment. I and the Defense Department's other senior leaders who have been studying this issue over the past year have met with some of these transgender service members. They've deployed all over the world, serving on aircraft, submarines, forward operating bases, and right here in the Pentagon. And while I learned that in most cases, their peers and local commanders have recognized the value of retaining such high-quality people, I also learned that the lack of clear guidelines for how to handle this issue puts the commanders and the service members in a difficult and unfair position. One service member I met with described how some people had urged him to leave the military because of the challenges he was facing with our policies, and he said he just wouldn't quit. He was too committed to the mission, and this is where he wanted to be. These are the kind of people we want serving in our military. The third and final reason for the change, also important, is a matter of principle. Americans who want to serve and can meet our standards should be afforded the opportunity to compete to do so. After all, our all-volunteer force is built upon having the most qualified Americans. And the profession of arms is based on honor and trust. Army Chief of Staff General Milley recently reminded us of this when he said, and I quote him, "The United States Army is open to all Americans who meet the standard, regardless of who they are." Embedded within our Constitution is that very principle, that all Americans are free and equal. And we as an Army are sworn to protect and defend that very principle. And we are sworn to even die for that principle. So if we in uniform are willing to die for that principle, then we in uniform should be willing to live by that principle. It's General Milley. In view of these three reasons to change our policy, last July I directed the commencement of a study to identify the practical issues related to transgender Americans serving openly, and to develop an implementation plan that addresses those issues consistent with military readiness, because our mission, which is defending the country, has to come first. I directed the working group to start with the presumption that transgender persons can serve openly without adverse impact on military effectiveness and readiness, unless and except where objective, practical impediments are identified. I think it's fair to say this has been an educational process for a lot of people here in the department, including me. We had to look carefully and deliberately at medical, legal, and policy considerations that have been evolving very rapidly in recent years. And we had to take into account the unique nature of military readiness and make sure we got it right. I'm proud of the thoughtful and deliberate manner in which the department's leadership has pursued this review. I've been guided throughout by one central question: is someone the best qualified service member to accomplish our mission?
Critics say lifting the ban on transgender people could harm the military's readiness for combat, but several studies commissioned by the Pentagon reached the opposite conclusion. Harry Horton, Washington.
MSNBC's Rachel Maddow spoke with sociology professor and researcher Aaron Belkin about the end of the military's transgender ban. Belkin is the author of How We Won: Progressive Lessons from the Repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
The research is very clear that implementation of inclusive policy is simple, and it's not difficult to let people be who they are. And so it's true, we've heard some talk about what a complicated issue transgender service is, but it's not. The military knows what it's doing. The troops are already serving with transgender peers, and implementation is going to be a success. It's not going to be a problem.
Do you have a heart to serve?
There should not have been a problem, but the carefully laid out policy got trumped in January of 2019.
The U.S. Supreme Court issued a ruling on January 22nd, lifting most of the injunctions blocking the implementation of President Donald Trump's ban on transgender military service. Trump appointed Justices Neil Gorsuch and Brett Kavanaugh joined the 5-4 majority.
The Obama administration policy that would have allowed qualified trans people to serve openly in the U.S. military was set to take effect in July of 2017. Obama Defense Secretary Ash Carter's declaration a year earlier had followed months of study and debate inside and outside of the military. Then Trump tweeted,
"I'm doing the military a great favor."
This indecision's bugging me. Indecision, they molest us. If you don't want me, set me free.
Set me careless, you come in.
Exactly whom I'm supposed to be. Don't you know which clothes even fit me? Come on and let me know. Should I cool it or should I blow?
A new commander-in-chief meant a new day for transgender members of the U.S. military, and that day was January 25th, 2021.
This is reinstating a position that previous commanders and as well as the secretaries have supported.
Signing one of the 24 executive orders of his first 2 weeks in office, President Biden rescinded his predecessor's ban on trans people serving in the military.
And what I'm doing is enabling all qualified Americans to serve their country in uniform and essentially restoring the situation that existed before with transgender personnel, if qualified in every other way, can serve our government in the United States military. Thank you again.
The Biden administration's policy formally took effect on April 30th. In late June, the Department of Veterans Affairs began preparations to offer gender confirmation surgery under its health care plan. Thanks for discovering This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. Some program material this week came from Risha Chappell and Michael LeBeau, produced by Brian DeShazer, from Mark Paugh, produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns, and from feature story news reporter Harry Horton. John Denver, Sam Cooke, Ella Fitzgerald, Princeton Marcellus, The Clash, and Michael Johnson performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed at the music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Ivana Foundation, a bequest from Christopher David Trentum, and donors Paul Bannon and Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley. Listener donors make this program possible. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For Associate Producer Richard Chappell and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. We thank you for listening online at thiswayout.org and on WHYS Eau Claire, Wisconsin, KGNU Boulder, Denver, Fort Collins, Ward, Colorado, CFRC Kingston, Ontario, and a wide array of community terrestrial and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay tuned.